Well, I'll try to follow the hints or directions given to me by Mr. Ranjan Maharaj.
Please don't let me force you to speak about something. I just know that you can do it.
Well, to be forced to speak about Srila Prabhupada is quite a nice... The... I want to do two things. I want to give, fulfill the interest in speaking something of my personal experience with Srila Prabhupada. And at the same time, I'd like to go on a different track from just how I was impressed by Srila Prabhupada or how he was so spiritual, because everybody's so spiritual. You meet somebody, some guru, and he's all, his vibrations are so spiritual. He knew everything that I was thinking. Or he was so effulgent, and you know, just plug in the guru of the month, and they're like interchangeable parts. So I'm thinking of what I should speak about so that I don't go there, and at the same time, it's not just philosophical dry stuff. One thing I will say about Srila Prabhupada's nature is that he was jolly. Prabhupada used that word himself. He said, he was quoting Bhagavad Gita, Brahmabhuta Prasanatma. The first symptom of a self-realized person is that he's jolly. He's not morose. As there are some philosophers and thinkers, they're always... They're morose, and they're thoughtfully morose. But Srila Prabhupada was joyful because he was in touch with Krishna, who's joyful by nature. And because the spirit soul is by nature joyful. I'll tell some stories. Actually, I was first initiated, where I first became Srila Prabhupada's disciple, in 1968. What had happened was that Srila Prabhupada, after coming to America and staying some time, had a heart attack and gone back to India. And then after some time, he came back to America. And it was during that interval that he was away that I joined the Society of Devotees. And then he came back. So, I received initiation in New York City, and the next day Srila Prabhupada was going to Boston. And he had a couple who were assisting him in cooking and secretarial work. And the woman who was cooking was sort of a frail person and was having difficulty keeping up, so an assistant was wanted. So they thought, so one devotee, Satsarup Maharaj, suggested, well, what about me? And this new boy. And I never cooked anything in my life. But they decided, there was another devotee, Devananda, who was quite a good cook. But they fixed it up that I would go for 2 weeks, and then he would go for 2 weeks. And if I messed up too badly, then he'd come earlier. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada was staying in a little house in Alston. And as Niranjan Maharaj was describing, I was seeing how Srila Prabhupada was always engaged in Krishna's service, always speaking about Krishna, always doing something for Krishna. And sometimes I remember once in the morning, he was sitting in his room, the door was closed, and he was just chanting some songs. Samsara dava naladita loka tranaya karunya karaganatam. No instruments, anything, it's just chanting. And this god says, then I was sitting outside the door. And I guess Srila Prabhupada somehow knew I was there. I think mystic powers, I guess it was evident that I was there. And he called out, he said, Jaya Dvaita. And I came in and offered respects. Prabhupada said, you were hearing? Meaning, you were listening? And I said, yes, through the problem. He was a very good boy. Because that was his process to hear from a devotee of Krishna. That sound vibration purifies the heart. Krishna is the original source of transcendental knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. And the devotee of Krishna is speaking the same thing. Niranjan Maharaj mentioned that Srila Prabhupada was authentic. And one aspect of that authenticity, and he used to say it himself, was that he was speaking what Krishna was speaking. So many philosophers, they're speaking what they're speaking, and even sticking it into Krishna's book. But Srila Prabhupada was repeating what Krishna was saying. Prabhupada sometimes gave the example of what he called a postal peon, which was kind of British and Indian and English. Postal peon, what we would call a postman. And the postal peon doesn't open your letter or edit it or add something or take out something. He just delivers the letter that your friend has sent you. So Prabhupada said that was his function. When Krishna has spoken something, and he was delivering intact the same message without adding anything or pulling anything out or changing anything. Just what Krishna had said. So he used to say, if I have any credit, it's not his credit, but his spiritual master's credit and Krishna's credit. That reminds me of another story. I was in New York one time. Srila Prabhupada was there during the summertime, and an elderly gentleman came who belonged to a well-known yoga society, and he had a letter from Srila Prabhupada. Apparently he'd written to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had written back, yes, when I come back to New York, then you can meet me. So he came to the temple, and he had his letter, and Srila Prabhupada was living just down the street, 4-minute walk. So the temple president said, all right, and had me bring the gentleman to Srila Prabhupada's apartment. So the man came, and he was very respectful to Srila Prabhupada. And he said, Swamiji, I like your teachings very much, but thing I can't understand is that you said that such and such person was a rascal. And he mentioned a well-known spiritual figure from Bengal. He said, and I always thought that he was a very holy person, and I don't understand why you would say that he's a rascal. And Prabhupada said, who has said that I have said this? And the man said, you didn't say that? Prabhupada said, if they have said that I have said, and I have not said, then they are rascal. Well, then the man was quite okay, he's happy. Then Prabhupada took a book from his shelf, a blue book which was a translation and commentary on Bhagavad Gita by a former president of India. And he took down the book and gave it to the man. He said, you know this book? The man looked at, Dr. Such and Such, Vedanta Society. And, he was on home turf. He was very happy. And Prabhupada opened the book up and said, read. So the verse Prabhupada had selected was Manmana Bhavamat Bhakta Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru Mami Vaishasi Satyante Pratijane Priyoshi. Always think of me, Krishna said. Bhavamat Bhakta, become my devotee. Madhyaji, worship me. Mam Namaskuru, offer your homage to me. Mami Vaishasi Satyante, and you'll come to me. I promise you this because you're my devotee. So the man read the translation, and it was quite in order. Prabhupada said, yes, he is a very good scholar. He has translated it very nicely. Now, the commentary, what does he say? The man began reading, it is not to Krishna that we have to surrender, but to the unborn, beginningless, something, something. Prabhupada said, just see. Therefore, I say they are all rascals. Krishna is saying me, and he's saying not Krishna. Then Prabhupada quoted a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Namam duskrita namuta prapadyante naradhama maya pritagana asuram bhavamashrita. If Krishna says, if one doesn't surrender to me, to the personality of Godhead, to the absolute truth, then he's duskritana, he's a miscreant, he's muta. Muta means an ass, the dumb fool. Naradhama means the lowest among human beings. Maya pratigyana, he's a person whose gyan, his knowledge, has been stolen away by illusion. So he may appear to be a learned scholar, a professor, a philosopher, but it's like the empty shell of knowledge. The real stuff has been plundered. And asura bhavamashrita, just a person of demonic nature. Krishna says these four kinds of people never surrender to me. So Prabhupada went through each of those terms and explain them at some point, and then said, it's not my saying, it's Krishna's saying. What can I do? Yes, because I have to give Krishna's message, and this is what Krishna says. It's not all peaches and cream and everybody's wonderful and whatever you do, it all leads to the Prabhupada. never tired of dealing with that idea. All roads lead to Rome. Whatever you do, we all end up in the same place. You worship this demigod, or you take this path, or that path, or the other path. It all goes to the same place. And Prabhupada would have none of it. He said, if you're in Calcutta, if you're in Delhi and you buy a ticket from Calcutta, do you end up in Bombay? It doesn't make sense. And he would quote from Bhagavad Gita, Yanti Deva Vrata Deva, those who worship the devas, the demigods, go to the abodes of those demigods. Pitri Yanti Pitri Vrata, those who worship their ancestors, the ancestors go to the ancestors. Bhutani, there are people who worship ghosts. Back in those hippie days, I knew some ghost worshippers. Want to get in touch with discarnate spirits, and then you can go. You can become one of them. And Yanti Madhyajanopimam, and those who engage in my service come to me, Krishna says. So you do this and you go here, you go do this and you go there, you go do this, and not that whatever you do you wind up in the same place. Which is, you can read book after book after book, and it's sort of like, almost like something that comes out of an ice cream churn, it's all just well blended, and it's all the same, that we're all very spiritual, and whatever we do, we're all really doing the same thing. We used to... in so many ways. That's just not what Krishna was saying. Not that any path. There are paths that lead to elevation. Jnana yoga leads upwards. Karma yoga leads upwards. But they're, Prabhupada said, like stepping stones to bhakti yoga. And there are other things that lead nowhere or lead down. Not that everything leads to the same place. So Prabhupada was strong on that. And that was another thing that we liked about Srila Prabhupada. Does anyone remember Meher Baba?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there was like a big poster. I don't know what very much Meher Baba was about, but there was a big poster, and it was just like something like, be peaceful and be still and know that you're God, wasn't it?
And don't worry, be happy.
But don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. And he had a kind of a knowing look. Don't worry, be happy. And I don't think there was too much more than that. Don't worry, be happy. And I'd sort of had enough of that. There were, you meditate 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening. And I heard the fellow who was like a big guy in that organization speak one time. And it was like, you just do this little meditation, 15 minutes a day, and you'll get, your studies will improve, you'll feel better about yourself, your relationships will improve, your sex life will be better, and you'll merge with the universal field. Like whatever it is you want. You want money, you'll get money. You want education, you'll get an education. You want a girl, you'll get a girl. You want to merge with God, you'll merge with God. And all that for, it wasn't $35 anymore. And from where I was sitting, not such a, as Prabhupada said, cheap thing. No rules, no regulations, no... You just kind of do what you always did, and you wear my button, and your whole life becomes wonderful. Not bad. Prabhupada said it's not a cheap thing, and therefore he was, as Niranjan Maharaj said, he came to the place where we were all anti-authoritarian, and laid down the law. Or, not just laid down the law, but said, no, drugs don't work. Sex, as a, we back in Lower East, everybody had a philosophy back in the 1960s. It was one of the beautiful weirdnesses of the 1960s. Everybody was a philosopher, and they used to come to 22nd Avenue and hold forth at Providence Temple. You know, with their at question time, they would propose their philosophy. And Prabhupada was not just going with the flow. No, you just had to go with the flow. Prabhupada didn't go with the flow. He went against the flow. Totally. Drugs don't work. Sex as a means of God realization is not going to lead you to God. Otherwise, the monkey would be the self-realized soul. You're vegetarian, very nice, but the monkey is vegetarian, so what's the big deal? It's strong. And that was part of his authenticity, that he was giving something, that if you want to, you know, win the Olympics, you don't just kind of sit back and at the last minute run the race. There's a process. There's a process. And Prabhupada was giving us an authentic spiritual process. He wasn't making up something. It was there in the Vedic literature. He was delivering it. And as Maharaj said, he was living it. We were seeing. He was, whatever he was asking us to do, he was doing. He was doing. Reminded me of another time. There was at 22nd Avenue. 22nd Avenue was Prabhupada's first temple in Greenwich Village in New York. In Lower East Side, Greenwich Village. Lower East Side of New York. And at that time, there were a lot of people who belonged to yoga societies, and they were kind of like very one-y. You know, everything is one. That was like the ultimate realization. That we're really all one. In fact, one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, Giriraj Maharaj, here in Boston, when he was out at Kirtan chanting and distributing some books, and he met one man who knew everything, and the man was saying how really everything is one. And Giriraj Maharaj said, if everything is one, then give me your wallet, because there's no difference between your pocket and my pocket. And the man was so committed to his argument that he handed over his wallet. I believe he later had to come back and ask for bus fare. Everything is one. Anyway, there was a very nice young lady who had been coming to 22nd Avenue for some days. She was obviously attracted to the chanting, to the devotees. And then Prabhupada came. Traveling, and then he came to New York. So she came to Prabhupada's lecture, Prabhupada's class, and at the end, after Prabhupada spoke, he called for questions. And she said, Swamiji, in a very knowing voice, isn't it true that ultimately everything is one? And Srila Prabhupada said no. And he gave an example. He said, just like food. If you have some food, he said, there are 9 holes in the body. But does that mean that you can put the food here? Or here? Or here? said, no, you have to put the food in the mouth so that it goes to the stomach. Although the body is one, it's not that everything and any hole will do. There's a particular hole, the mouth, and you put the food there, and then you get nourishment. So again, this idea that not everything was interchangeable, everything was the same, he didn't go for. Now, on the other hand, philosophically speaking, he gave a very compelling, to use Marsh's word, compelling explanation of how there is oneness. And he explained how Krishna is everything, and everything is Krishna, and yet at the same time, Krishna maintains his individuality. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's explained that there are three realizations of God. The first realization is realization of God's all-pervading nature. God is everywhere. God pervades all things. God is in every atom, between every atom. God is the essence of everything that exists. No place where God is absent. And at that, yes, the realization of God's presence as a force, you could say, God's energy. That's called Brahman realization. Then Srila Prabhupada said above that, or the Bhagavatam says above that, is a further realization that God is within me, God is in my heart. We get inspiration, we get knowledge, sometimes we get forgetfulness. We feel that there's a higher intelligence guiding us. All the scriptures are saying, look within and find God. So that's God's second feature, that he's present within the heart of every living being. The human being, the elephant, the dog, the tree. God is there. And yet, Srila Prabhupada said, or Bhagavatam says, there's a third feature of God. God is not only present everywhere, and not only within our hearts, but he has his own discrete abode. He has the place where he lives. And he has his own independent existence. As you're a person, and I'm a person, and all of us are persons, God is not less than a person. I have my father, he has his father. Not that we get to a certain point and we say, well, then before that there was just a void or a divine. We come to the original person. And that's Krishna. So Prabhupada was explaining these three, and they're all the same. It's not that there's one God who's everywhere and a second God who's in everyone's heart, and then there's this third God off there in the third place, but it's the same absolute truth, the same God, realized in three different aspects. And Prabhupada, his usual example of that was the sun. We look up in the sky and we see that the sun is illuminating the whole sky. But then you look further and you see that there's that big disk of the sky. And the sun light is an emanation, is the energy of that planet. And if you could actually go to that planet, then according to Vedic literature, you could meet the sun god, who's the person in charge of the sun, and shake hands with him and get a guided tour and learn all about the workings of the sun. So if we only know the sunshine, we know the sun, but not fully. If we know the planet, then we know the planet and the sunshine both. And if we meet the sun god personally, then we know all three features. We know all the different aspects. So there's oneness there, and at the same time, there's different levels of realization. So Srila Prabhupada was presenting realization of Krishna as the highest realization, and service to Krishna as the highest eternal engagement of the living being. And I can say more, but I you want to give me a sense of time? Or?
Yeah, and we should probably say a little more and then a little more kirtan to wrap it up. And it's okay. About 9 o'clock now. So.
Can I ask you a question or comment on what you just said?
Sure.
So just this phrase keeps going through my head. So would it be, I don't know if the word is right or correct or something, in thinking that based on everything you just explained, isn't there a oneness in the fact that we all share the capacity for God realization, for Krishna consciousness,
oh, yeah.
That connects us all kind of on the same level as beings?
Yes, absolutely. It's not that everything is,
right.
You know,
so,
if you say these two things are one, then probably say, no, nothing's one.
So it's a matter of choice, of choosing that, to go there and work for it. And
the oneness is that we're all spiritual beings.
Yeah, that's kind of where
I... Materially, we're all different.
Right.
You know, some of us are tall, some short, some... big and some
so the
skinny.
Oneness is that we're jivas.
Excuse me?
The oneness is that we're all jivas.
The oneness
and
is
the
that we're all jivas.
Krishna.
And there's oneness with Krishna too, because as a spiritual living being, I'm like a sample of Krishna.
Oh, we're not the blob.
No, we're not the blob.
The blob, the one, you know, the, not that.
Yeah, not that.
Yeah.
That just the blob is nowhere. it really is.
Yeah.
But that there's...
The commonality that we share, I feel, is that oneness. I guess I would call it more a connection, a connectedness. We're all connected in that we all have the propensity to go home.
Absolutely. It's oneness with individuality.
Yeah.
Yeah, Prabhupada wasn't against oneness, but it's just that they're always one, and they can't get off it.
Yeah.
Prabhupada was one, but retaining our individual existence while we're one. Prabhupada gave the example, like as Americans, we're all one. But it doesn't mean I'm you, you're me, and, you know, you have breakfast, and I feel full. So there's oneness and individuality both. That's the complete picture. This other thing is soup. And Prabhupada was giving the real thing. Thank you. Maybe, since I have a couple of minutes, I will mention my book. This is shameless advertisement time. This is a book which I've written called Vanity Karma, Ecclesiastes, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Meaning of Life. It's a commentary on... the book of Ecclesiastes, which is a book of the Old Testament of the Bible. The book is perhaps, Ecclesiastes is perhaps well known for that passage about times and seasons. For everything there's a purpose and a time to every, for everything there's a season, a time to every purpose under heaven. But it's a very deep book, Ecclesiastes, a lot to it. Dealing really with the question of whether, what point there is to our life. That's really the burning question in Ecclesiastes. So much so that it starts with a negative assessment that everything is vanity. Vanity in the sense of meaninglessness or emptiness or absurdity or pointlessness or so on. The king who's the speaker says, I had so much, I built up a big kingdom, and then I saw that it was nothing. And then I cultivated knowledge, I became wiser than all my predecessors, and I saw that for all my wisdom, all I got was more anxiety. So he's, we'd say in Vedic knowledge, he's tried karma, he's tried jnana, he's tried enjoyment, he's tried knowledge, and nothing's working. Then he's in despair. And he deals with these issues from different angles and deals with the unfairness of the world. The race is not to the swift, nor success to men of skill, but time and chance happen to everyone. Means the world's unfair. He almost, his God is a very distant sort of being who puts within our hearts a desire to know what the world is, who we are, what existence is about, and then makes it impossible to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So it's a deeply philosophical book, Ecclesiastes, and I've written a commentary on it from the point of view of the Bhagavad Gita. And one feature of that exploration is that when you're looking at more than one lifetime, the world makes a hell of a lot more sense. The speaker of Ecclesiastes is looking and he sees that you're born and you go through life and you die and that's it. That's really his picture. And within that framework, how do you make sense of it? He sees that the wise man and the fool both go to the same destination. I dedicate myself to cultivating knowledge, and then I die and go to the same graveyard as the fool. I accumulate wealth, something of value, and then I leave and some stranger gets it. I die and it goes into the hands of some stranger. Everything I worked for, he gets. So, and what the good people deserve, the bad people get. What the bad people deserve, the good people get. It's a screwy world, and not screwy in a fun sense, but profoundly confusing. When you open up that picture, and there are many lifetimes, we start to see sense in the picture. We receive what we receive not by random, the results of a random number generator, but as a consequence of our previous activities. As in this life, I do something, I get a result. It extends over many lifetimes. The unexpected things that happen, good or bad, are the results of previous karma, previous activity. And this one lifetime is not everything in the sense that we also go beyond it. It's not just that there's, the soul doesn't just melt away or cease to exist, but it goes to another lifetime and ultimately has the opportunity to return to Krishna. Well, these are some of the themes. There, as I mentioned, there are many, and the book is not published. This is a copy shop copy, not the real thing, but in September the book will be released. If you'd like to know more about the book or be on the mailing lists to be informed when it comes out, we have a website, www.vanitykarma.com.